Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Pull Up Podcast, brought to you by HoopsCritic.com.
What a day. What a day. Hope we got some live listeners tonight, man. I'm James, also known as Snotty Dripping on Twitter. You guys all know me. Hope you're listening in. The draft is still rolling on. This is one of the longest first rounds I can ever remember. I think it started about 4 days ago. So not by myself today. I'm not going to bore you all to death. With me today is Mr. Dakota Schmidt. From Ridiculous Upside and a couple other sites. How you doing, Dakota?
Good. B-Ball Breakdown, Salted Hoops are some of the other sites I write for, but don't surprise if you see me everywhere else, including possibly maybe in the future, I'm hoping for a feature on Dog Fancy.
That's what's up, man. So, yeah, you guys want to check him out on Twitter. Hey, he does. Hey, the man's busy. He's a busy man. So if you want to check him out on Twitter, it's Dakota with a D, right?
D-A-K-O-T-A underscore S-C-H-M-I-D-T. But I'm thinking about it's all the rage now in the NBA. The three names with the hyphen after a second name. And you look in this draft, Carl Anthony Towns, Willie Cauley Stein, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, even going back a bit with Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Some of the best young defenders that are going to be in the league have three names and a hyphen.
I mean, it sounds like a plan. Are you going to go in with a hyphen? What are you going to make it?
Well, James is – I know James is my middle name, so maybe I want to go with that. Go James hyphen Schmidt.
No, as a primary James here, I will not allow it. So you got to find something else.
All right. So let's talk draft.
You know what? I'm kind of bummed out. Yeah, why? So let's go ahead and hop in and okay. Let's talk about coming into the draft. What were you looking at?
I'm a Bucks fan, so I was looking primarily at hoping that one of Kaminsky or, you know, Miles Turner falls down, or maybe even Will Cauley Stein, or, you know, some rumors that it would fall all the way down to like 21 earlier today. So realistically, I was looking at somebody like Bobby Portis or RJ Hunter. But then they surprised me and drafted Rashad Vaughn out of UNLV, who is basically the Nick Young of this year's draft.
So yeah, all the listeners out there, you guys should know. I mean, pretty sure y'all follow too. Yeah, that 17, you guys took Rashad Vaughn. Yes. I like the kid. So go ahead. So what was your initial reaction?
Just surprised because I didn't think the Bucks would take him with the 17th pick. He wasn't on the draft board that I made. I was thinking that maybe we would probably get like a stretch big, somebody like Bobby Portis, so I absolutely love, and well, we might talk about him later, but Rashad Vaughn, I was surprised for a bit, but then when I thought about it and thought of how the Bucks ran their offense, a lot of, you know, off-ball movement, a lot of spacing, I think Vaughn could be a south ender just because he has amazing range, and I think he's the second youngest player in this year's draft behind Devin Booker.
Okay, so yeah, you picked right after my mine. I'm a Celtics guy. You picked right after me.
Yes.
I'm not gonna do it. I'm not gonna do it to the people out there. I'm not gonna do it to you. You're listening. So, what was your take when you saw the Celtics picking Terry Rozier at 16?
When I saw the Celtics pick Terry Rozier, from Louisville. I didn't know what to think. I don't even think he was in my third tier of point guard. And at that time, Jaren Grant was still there, Delone Wright was still there, Tyus Jones was still there. If you guys need a point guard, which I don't know if you guys do, because you have Isaiah Thomas and Marcus Smart. So I was shocked. I thought you guys would grab up, you know, a stretch big, somebody like Kevon Looney or Bobby Portis. And I'm sure Danny Ainge is a smart guy, but I'm really questioning this pick from him.
Well, you know what? A while back, I was kind of looking forward to the draft because the Celtics were pretty firmly, seemed like we were lottery bound. And
yes.
Then we did some things to make ourselves unlottery bound by bringing in IT2 and, you know, oh, hey, we got Jay Crowder. All right, well, at 16, I didn't have very high hopes, and I heard all the rumors all day about moving up. And, you know, I know we needed some I'm not a big fan of James Young. I want to help on the wing. I want to help scoring. I think we don't need a point guard, you know. So I was hoping we got Kelly Oubre, who went right before. Thanks a lot, guys. I was hoping, I don't know, not that, man, not Terry Rozier. I'm if I sound depressed and beaten, I'm a little beaten right now, you know. So it's funny, and our second pick, just a quick aside, R.J. Hunter, it's funny because I tweeted a while back, if we get R.J. Hunter, tell me R.J. Hunter, I'm done being a fan. And he actually searched his name and replied to me. So I felt kind of bad, and now he actually is a Celtic, so it's kind of awkward. Kind of awkward.
So, a while back, I did a five questions piece on the Boston Celtics, and I was, as I was watching them and, you know, digging deep into the team, I was thinking, you know, a playoff run is pretty solid, especially for a team like Boston, who, you know, people really didn't expect to go that far, but you guys really don't have a lot of young pieces to build around. Mainly Marcus Smart and maybe Avery Bradley. That's basically it.
You know what, man? I get it. See, and I keep getting people in my, you know, oh, well, the playoffs are good for us and such a winning culture. 90% of these guys won't be here in 3 years, man. You know, Marcus Smart is the only, quote-unquote, foundational player that we have. And the whole point of this whole teardown was to get foundational players in the draft. You know, so when I get people telling me, well, you got Isaiah Thomas out of this, get Isaiah Thomas in a couple seasons, he might not be here because he's going to want more money and, you know, he's an attractive asset, so he's probably going to be moved too. Don't get me started, man. Don't get me started. So let's talk about your boy.
Mm-hmm.
Rashad Vaughn, did you know anything about him before you guys drafted him?
Yeah, I looked a little into him because another side that right before I know you don't like to see him, but Silver Screen Roll for the Lakers. I was looking a bit at him because he was one of the players that the Lakers could pick with 27. And like I said earlier, he reminds me of, you know, a lot of Nick Young, primarily because he's a gunner. He can shoot. He can, yes, you know, amazing range on his jumper, but he likes to shoot way, way too much. He's not a good facilitator. His defensive skills aren't there yet, and maybe playing in the Jason Kidd system, high ball pressure system in Milwaukee will help. But I really – the perimeter play will help, maybe Kim. I think you can tell I'm a bit conflicted.
You can call him a what?
I'm a bit conflicted right now. You can probably tell.
Okay. Conflicted is a good word. All right. I'll say this. Well, now here's the question I got to you. Would you swap him with Terry Rozier?
We'll keep him. Rashad Vaughn.
Yeah, I watched the Draft Express video on Rashad, man, and I mean, I see a big strong kid. I see he has great NBA size with a coach like Jason Kidd, Jason Kidd seems to get it. He wants to get, you know, long guys on the perimeter who can switch. at least, you know, 1 through 3. What's this kid's wingspan, do you know?
He's 6'5", but he only has a 6'7" wingspan. But you can, I think he's quick enough to guard points and long enough to guard some small forwards.
Which is, I mean, again, yeah, that's the thing. 6'5", and that wingspan, it's he can pick up a small forward, and he can, you know, switch onto a point guard. That's not bad at all. And I mean, he's not going to be so. Wow, yeah, you're starting point guards way longer and taller than he is.
But the thing is, we need a shooter because the guy you're talking about is not a shooter.
So you don't see him as being a shooter? He's not a good enough shooter?
No, except the guy you were talking about, the point guard.
Oh, yeah. MCW is definitely not a shooter. And we haven't seen enough of Jabari to know if he has a three-point rating. And we know that your boy Giannis Alphabet doesn't have it.
He developed some mid-range game. He solidified some mid-range game last year. I think he shot around 38%. From mid-range, which isn't too bad for a player who, you know, struggled shooting last year.
Yeah, but we saw. I mean, it's one thing percentage-wise, but we know that, you know, if you make Giannis pull up a mid-range shot, you've won the possession. You know what I mean? So
yeah.
I think you got a gamer, and I mean, right now, all you guys need, what I look at, and tell me if I'm wrong, you just need more time. Because you're getting your boy back next year. Jabari's coming back. You're going to get another year of development from Giannis. I really thought you guys needed an interior presence. I liked your boy John. What's his name? Help me out.
John Henson. Henson. I like Henson. And when you're talking about guys that can switch off, Henson can do that. He can go out sometimes and protect against penetration.
Definitely. But then,
go on.
No, I was saying, we watched the size of Chicago just wear you down. You know, Pau Gasol is a Hall of Famer, but he's a little older, but he still pretty much, you know, had whatever he wanted against you guys. So I thought you might need one more big man in there, and, you know, the guy, it sucks what your boy did to you when he, you know, decided to smoke weed and leave. But,
when he decided that skateboarding was more important than the basketball.
That's insane to me. That whole Larry Sanders thing is it's a sad thing. But what are you gonna do, right? So yeah, I had actually projected you guys in our Hoops Critic mock draft to get Christian Wood, which is kind of it's a reach at that pick. But I mean, he's long and athletic. I thought he worked with you guys.
Yeah, he's long, athletic. I watched a lot of him at watching Christian Wood film is when I noticed that Rashad Vaughn really likes to shoot. And, I like Christian Wood. I think he's more of a four because he's super skinny. He's 6'11", 216 pounds.
Wow.
I think Cameron Payne weighs more than that, and he's 6'2".
Wow.
But, I do like Christian Wood, you know, long 7'8" wingspan, can go on the perimeter, 2 points. I'm looking at Draft Express. I'm not some kind of whiz kid that can remember all kinds of stats, but 2.6 blocks per game, pretty solid. And he does have a solid mid-range, maybe even a perimeter jumper.
Okay. So yeah, you guys are gonna be one of my must-watch teams next year. So let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff pre-draft, and we're going to talk about some of the winners and losers from tonight, because I think I'm shocked how far Moutier fell, and I'm kind of surprised how far Winslow fell. What was the surprise for you in the first round? In the lottery, what was one of your surprises?
Billy taking Jahlil Okafor, because before I, you know, really didn't know what they were trying to do, now I have the furthest thing of an idea of what they're going to do with this team. I know Embiid's not going to be there, and I know you know, at least for the start of the season. I know Noel could work as a four, but what are they going to do, I guess, after the year after next if Dario Saric comes over?
Well, this is my thing with that, and this is, I think, we're using conventional basketball logic, which is solid logic, because you're thinking the same thing. You're like, how's it going to work, all these bigs? But, you know, Hinkie doesn't care right now. This is all about talent acquisition. And it's funny because not you and me, but I think a lot of people, like, they want to accelerate his plan, but that's not his plan. So when people judge it on the scale of, well, what is he doing, he's wasting time, get him out of the rookie scale, that's not his concern right now. And even I had a feeling he'd take Okafor at three because he wants the best talent available. And we saw, I mean, it's not to a lesser extent, but they moved MCW after his rookie of the year. It's no one's untouchable. And so I dig it. I really like what Philly's doing. What do you think about Philly's rebuilding plan? How do you feel about it?
Like I said before, I have no idea. They have a lot of young talent on that team, but it's mostly at, you know, center and power forward. They really have nothing at in the backcourt. I'm thinking maybe they try to trade Embiid for a young backcourt player. Maybe they try. I know this is far against Hinkie logic, but maybe they try to make a free agent move.
It's coming. I just don't think it's coming on the timeline we expect. Like, even with Boston, people keep telling me, oh, well, you know, free agency is where you're going to really strike. What? I don't want to depend on that. I want us to draft some good young players and develop those good young players and then add to that. You know, right now, I love Marcus Smart, but that's it. That's all we got. So, but I love mm-hmm. what he's doing. So,
okay.
Here's my question. Coming into the draft, I want to hear your top. Give me your top 10. Run them down real quick.
All right, my top 10. Let me pull up here. Was Carmelo Anthony Towns, really looking for D'Angelo Russell, Mario Zona, Justice Winslow, Emmanuel Mudiay, Willie Cauley-Stein, Kristaps Porzingis, Frank Kaminsky, and Stanley Johnson.
Man. All right, so we agree on a lot of things. So here's my question. Why do you figure Okafor would be a better prospect than Russell?
My mind changes a lot every day, and when I was sitting there ranking, I was watching a lot of Okafor for a player breakdown than I did for B-ball breakdown, and I know Russell's a talented player, great facilitator, can, you know, roll to the basket, shot the perimeter jumper at high rate near his college, time with Ohio State. But Okafor seems, I know post-game is, you know, kind of going out of fashion, but I think he's perhaps the best post player since Tim Duncan coming into the league.
No doubt about it.
And while I love – yeah.
No, go ahead, man. Go ahead. Finish up.
You know, I love Russ, but having somebody that elite is a special thing.
Yeah, I had – we're very similar. I had – I got Towns. I had Russell, my number two. So I'm trying to get it worked out. I had Okafor. I had Johnson and Winslow. That was my four and five. Zonja, then Mudiay, Porzingis, Willie Cauley-Stein, and then actually at 10, I didn't really choose. I had either a combo, one of Looney, Oubre, or Booker. So, I don't know. I get it. The post game is never going to die. It's never going to go away. But my way of seeing it is that it went from the leading man in the 90s, the blockbuster actor, to now the post game is like a fine character actor now, supporting actor in a supporting role.
So you're saying that the post game is like Jeremy Renner?
The post game is now Jeremy Renner. Yes. It was it was Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the 80s and 90s, and now it's Jeremy Renner. That's that. Fine supporting actor and at times to steal a scene or two, but for the most part, that, you know, the space and pace is now what people are paying to see. So,
all right, now players like D'Angelo Russell or Chris Pratt.
That's a scary thought that we are calling D'Angelo Russell Chris Pratt, but that you make a hell of a lot of sense.
If D'Angelo Russell is the basketball equivalent to Chris Pratt, then I think a lot of Laker fans will be happy.
Because he did what?
Because look at the latest box office numbers for his last few movies. But we're not a movie. This is not a movie talk show. This is a basketball show. So, have any points?
My next question for you, I was going to ask you, who do you think so far, well, the first round, who won the first round? Who was the big winner in the first round?
I have to go with Minnesota. You know, Karl Anthony Towns was, you know, the obvious, but, you know, going in and picking up, you know, Tyus Jones, I know you're not the biggest Tyus Jones fan in the world, but I look at Tyus Jones, you know, he's a little undersized for the way the NBA is going, but he was one of the more efficient facilitators in the league. I think he had over a 3.0 assist to turnover ratio during his time in Duke. He can roll to the basket, and he was a pretty solid perimeter shooter with Duke. I think like 36-37%.
Okay. So you think Tyus and Karl Anthony make Minnesota the big winner?
Yeah, and there are other players that I like, of course. I know the people at the Barclays Center were, you know, not liking the Porzingis pick, to be kind, but I think they came out of the night awesome. I love Porzingis. He has a lot of potential, a lot of upside, can shoot, can drive to the paint, long, athletic. I think he can be a better defender than people think because I, you know, saw him work in the perimeter and at least contend against some of those European guards. It's going to be a bigger question to see how he, you know, stacks up against some of the competition he's going to be going against on a, you know, nightly basis. See if he can, you know, match up with your guy Marcus Smart, but that and Jerry Grant. I'm a huge Jerry Grant fan, and I would absolutely love to see him work in the Knicks alongside that triangle, that pinch pose, working off Carmelo Anthony. I can see Jerry Grant having a lot of success with the Knicks.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you here. I think initially, I know Knicks fans aren't happy with the pick of Kristaps Porzingis and him, but I think Grant saves the day. It's weird. He was, I don't know. I'm not really an NCAA guy, but when I just watched him play, I came away really impressed. I liked him better than, you know, people like Cameron Payne and Tyus Jones. And he was, you know, I guess most drafts, mocks had him what? Low 20s, mid-20s, right?
I think during the NCAA regular season, he was in the lottery. I think I remember.
Oh, okay. Well, and there you go. So, you know what? A point guard with size, that's what Phil Jackson likes in the triangle, and that's what they got. So, those are two. So you think the Knicks and Minnesota are winners. Give me a team that after the draft pick, you scratch your head, and don't pull any punches. Give me one.
I'm just looking at here. I I'm not so sure about Trey Lyles with Utah. I'm just not a Trey Lyles fan. He showcased that he can do a lot of things with Kentucky, But I don't even think he was above average at anything. He's not a great shooter. He can cut to the basket, and he is a good passer. But I just don't know about Trey Lyles. Not a huge fan, especially when you have guys like Devin Booker who can help the team with, you know, his perimeter shooting skills. You know, Kevon Looney, who I'm a huge fan of, and I'm surprised to see that he fall all the way down to Golden State. And even Bobby Portis, I absolutely love Bobby Portis as a prospect. I can see him being a tremendous, you know, role player slash spot star, kind of in the same role that Giannis Haslam played during his time in Miami.
Yes, I can see that as a souped up Giannis Haslam, man. And yeah, Trey Lyles, man, he doesn't move me. Like you just said, he just seemed extremely average. I get it. He has good size, and he has, you know, allegedly a nice shot. It's a good-looking shot, at least. But, I mean, will he be able to defend at a high enough level? Will he be able to rebound at a high enough level? Is he quick enough? Is he, you know, he just seems really, really just like the average NBA player, and that's not a good thing in this case. So yeah, the Jazz. And who else did you say?
Perhaps I'm just looking at here. Of course the Celtics, apologies.
No man, go ahead, let us have it.
Terry Rozier. Bobby Portis is right there. I think you would have loved Bobby Portis, right? You've been fine with Bobby Portis.
You know, it's funny. Actually, early in the process, I wasn't. I heard the mock say Bobby Portis to the Celtics, and I was like, you know, we have enough mid-sized, not explosive, you know, big men. But the more I watched him, he's definitely an upgrade to a lot of the. I would rather see him out there than Kelly Olynyk. So, but yeah, I had high hopes for this man, but whatever. Hey, all my Celtics fans out there, I hope you guys are really happy with that you know, 7-seed, 4-game stomping. Hope it was worth it. So.
And the Hornets, another stretch four, third year in a row that they pick a stretch four. Picking another stretch pick.
Yeah.
Cody Zeller in 2013, Noah Vonleh, who's gone now. In 2014, and now Frank Kaminsky. No disrespect to Frank Kaminsky, who's my ninth highest rated player, but again, with another stretch four, like Philly, I saw what the Hornets were trying to do with that Batum trade. I like the Batum trade for them, but Frank Kaminsky. To Charlotte, another stretch, big third year in a row. Again, year after year, people come out of draft just, you know, scratching their head at the Charlotte Hornets.
Yeah, man, especially when there was actually some wing scoring there for him, and like you said, Devin Booker was there. So all right, we're going to wrap up here in a second. So here's my question. Out of the whole first round, in fact, I'm going to give you the second round too. Who in 3 years is going to be the best pro? Just in 3 years, we'll go. I'll go. So 3 years, who will be the best? Who do you think will be the best pro?
I'll give you some names here. Okay, in 3 years, who's going to be the best pro? I'll actually give you five names: Karl Anthony Towns, D'Angelo Russell, Jahlil Okafor, Mario Hezonja, and I'm going to throw a curveball here. I like Justice Winslow, and I also like Miles Turner to be a really solid NBA pro.
Really? Oh, man, I'm not high on Miles either, man. Indiana's a good spot for him, though. That's a good spot.
Yeah, he can stretch the floor, and he can protect the rim.
He can, but I think one of the reports was about him, he's kind of shied away from contact, and that's kind of, you know, you're an NBA big man. You got to mix it up a little bit sometimes. Okay, so now who do you think out of the top 10 has the highest, I don't want to use that word, that can possibly the most disappointing? I'm not going to call him a bust. Who do you think has the highest chance of washing out?
Washing out. That's tough for me because I like, even though I was questioning Frank Kaminsky with Charlotte, I like Kaminsky a lot, but out of these top 10, you're giving me a tough one here, Snotty. I'll go with Kaminsky. I think he can, stretch the floor, cut to the baskets. He has some work in the post game, but he could be dominated on the defensive end.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm not high on Kaminsky at all. It's sad. I like that because I want Charlotte to be good. I think that fan base deserves a lot better than they've gotten recently. So let's hope that with the recent trades, and let's hope, hey, maybe Kaminsky, he can shoot. That's good, and he can go well with a post player like Al Jefferson. I'm really worried about Emmanuel Mudiay. I think he has the greatest, one of the best upsides, but just the fact that, he played, 12 games in China, and, there's not a lot of footage, and, the Chinese league, I don't know how it really stacks up to even college. And the jumper is bad. Not just the jumper is bad, but when a guy can't shoot free throws, that's troubling. So I think he is one of the biggest boom or bust players out there.
Before we wrap up, I think the most intriguing player for me is Mario Hezonja.
No doubt, I like him. I like him a lot. I like the bravado. I like the swagger. What catches him? What makes him such an intriguing prospect in your eyes?
Like you said, the swagger, the bravado, the "I think I'm the best player on the court" type mentality, which can either be perfect, fantastic, or could be the absolute worst thing like we have seen with J.R. Smith over the last decade. But like you said, just watching Hezonja. Right after watching the finals, he reminds me a lot of Klay Thompson with the way he works off ball, works around the off-ball screen, catches this, and shoots that beautiful perimeter jumper. He's pretty athletic. He didn't get a lot of chance to showcase it with FC Barcelona, but he is an athletic player, and I think he has a lot of potential on the defensive end. And, playing with Orlando and Scott Skiles, I think he can become pretty fantastic, solid defensive force in that huge Orlando defense-oriented starting five.
I definitely agree, man. Orlando just has to make some moves. They got so many mismatched pieces and so much talent that just doesn't quite fit. But I like him there. They need the shooting, and he's gonna be a fun addition down there. Hey, man, I really appreciate you coming on. I'm going to be doing this once a week. I'd love to have you on again. And we'll talk some summer free agency, what you guys might want to do. Take the floor. Anything you want to say before you go?
At Dakota, DAKOTA _ Schmidt on Twitter. Just follow me on there to keep up with all of the writing I'm going to do. I'm probably going to stay up a bit to write some post-draft stuff, so follow me for some fun insights and just me maybe going crazy during the offseason when it comes to what the Bucks are going to do.
What the Bucks are going to do, I like that, man. Man, you guys follow Dakota Schmidt, one of the hardest working men in blog business. We're going to call him the James Brown of the writing sphere. He's whatever you're doing, man, maybe I'm going to call you for advice because, as you know, I'm kind of lazy about writing. I kind of pop up whenever I can. I need to get that diligence you got, man. But keep writing out there, man. Hey, everybody, thanks to Dakota Schmidt for stopping by. And we'll catch up with you this summer, brother.
All right.
All right, so, that was Dakota Schmidt, man. I'm glad we had him on. The draft bummed me out. I'm real good stuff in Dakota, man. I like Rashad Vaughn there. And, I agree. Mario's really interesting. I think I got somebody coming on next, you guys. He deserves to come on. It's one of the Timberwolves bloggers. He's over at Can I Hoopus. My man David Naylor, I think I might have just actually hung up on him. So while I try to get him back on. Yeah, I think the Lakers shocked me. They have a habit of going big. And the fact that, you know, they kind of bucked general wisdom, general consensus, I like that. I like the fact that the Lakers, they went against the grain and they're taking a leap. They like the star power, I think, of D'Angelo Russell. It's still Los Angeles. You know, they still want to – they need the splash. They need the flair. And not just that, but the kick and play. He can really just shoot lights out. So I'm looking forward to it. All right, so, yeah, next up, let's get my man on here. He writes for Can I Hoopus. David Naylor, I know he must be flying high.
Yeah, I'm in a good spot right now. What's good,
what's up,
Dave?
Man? Yeah, thanks for joining us, David.
It's my pleasure.
I can hear it in your voice, man.
What a night, man.
You're bringing it ear to ear. I can hear it in your voice.
Like, if you spent any time looking at the portion of Timberwolves Twitter that I've spent most of my time in, Towns and Tyus Jones was the dream. Like, it was the, like, unachievable dream that would never, ever actually happen. And the fact that Flip actually pulled this off is just astounding.
Man, I'm salty right now. I'm a little jealous.
No, I've been reading your Twitter, too. Your boys have made some choices.
All right. So let's back up a little bit.
All right.
I'm going to back up a good little while, all right? So
yep.
How long have you been a Timberwolves fan?
I have been a Timberwolves fan probably since about 2009, 2010. I'm not a long-time lifer guy. I actually didn't get into following the NBA until right around that same amount of time. And when I started watching basketball, I just became really enamored with Ricky Rubio's play and just kind of went from there. And so I've endured many years of being a Timberwolves fan and all the joys that come with that.
All right, we're going to play a little quick word association game. I'm going to say a phrase or a name. I want you to give me the one word you associate with it.
All right.
Got it?
Yep.
Kevin Love.
Decent.
All right. Hey, you know what? You're being politically correct. I respect it.
I like him as a basketball player. I really do. Like, but
so you know what? From the outside looking in, right? As a basketball fan, you know, I'm a pretty big fan of all. I watch everything. So yeah, it's funny. From outside looking in, I felt bad for him because I didn't feel like ownership really treated him great when they, you know, like with how they came and shoved the extension under his nose in the locker room. And, yeah, but I know they made concessions for him as a star. That's fine. And then, you know, I think the average basketball fan, too, oh, man, I hope he goes to a good team. Give me your perspective on the whole Kevin, on the run-up to the Kevin Love trade. Give me the from your side of the story.
Okay, so let's walk back in time a little bit. So, I don't remember if it was 2012 or 2013, when Kevin Love's rookie deal was up and he was up for an extension, and the venerable David Kahn, in his infinite wisdom, chose not to give Kevin Love a max deal, which he quite clearly had played enough and well enough to deserve. That's what set the table for this, because Love didn't get – he took the deal he got, and he – was not happy about it. And that is on David Kahn, which so many of the wonderful things about the Minnesota Timberwolves over the last few years have been. But that set the table for the summer of 2014 to happen, because obviously Love was unhappy with the situation. He'd been playing lights out, and the fact that the Wolves they finished the 2013-2014 season with 40 wins, which, looking at a lot of the pieces of that roster and how many injuries they dealt with that year, was an incredible effort. But they're a Western Conference team, so that it wasn't enough to get into the playoffs. And so then the two options became clear. the Golden State offer and the Cleveland offer. And up until, you know, the draft happened and Wiggins became a part of the discussion, like, that there was no part that wanted a part of the Cleveland offer. Like, Klay Thompson, like, looking at, I think it was Thompson, Barnes, and Lee, or something like that for Love from Golden State. That looked great.
Something like that. Yeah, something like that. And I'm not going to lie, I thought it sounded – what did you think? Go ahead.
I would have taken that over what the Cavs were offering, which was crap. But once the Cavs caved and included Wiggins, that was the deal that pretty much everything wanted. And that was, like, once that came through, it was the best possible outcome. Love got to go play in Cleveland on a great team and maybe actually get to show the rest of the country that he's actually a good player and not this guy that just puts the 2020s on a bad team. And the Timberwolves get to reset with Wiggins and the potential maybe of Anthony Bennett and then just all the things that came with that and then Thad Young, which didn't end up working out. But the deal that came through, I think, was the best thing for both ends of the situation, because I was not among the people who were frustrated with Love for leaving. He was doing the best thing for him. Just like right now, look at Cleveland Twitter yesterday when the opt-out became official. He's doing the best thing for him, and he's doing right by him, which is the thing I greatly respect in a guy. He's going to go get paid
right
this summer, as he should.
As he should, exactly. Back to word association. Back to word association. Sorry, we got through.
No, you're good. We sidetracked.
All right, so lottery.
Lottery.
Give me your...
Let's see. One word.
One word.
Uncertainty. Like, even still.
Andrew Wiggins.
All-star.
He's gonna be
not
nice,
yet,
man. You know what? I want you to riff a little bit. I want you to be able to puff your chest out a little bit. So, was there any doubt who you wanted to take in the draft?
For me, a little, but not much. Towns was clearly the best option, and if it was going to work, it was going to work. And once we got number one, that was really the thing. Before the draft lottery, when it was still, we're going to be in the top four, we know that for sure, I was on my horse for D'Angelo Russell, because even with Rubio, even having just drafted LaVine, Russell seems like the kind of guy who's going to end up being a star in the league. And, yeah, the Wolves needed backcourt, but if, like, the Wolves end up with the third pick and Tyson Okafor off the board, take Russell. And it got to the point, as it ended up playing out today, maybe even take him over Okafor. And whether or not that was the right choice by the Lakers, time's going to tell. But I was really hyped about D'Angelo Russell, and I'm so stoked to see what he's going to do, even if it's for the Lakers, which I just have to tolerate. But Towns is the guy, and he's going to be an incredible fit on the team, which is an even bigger thing. There's all the talk about best pick available. Not only was Towns the best pick, he also fits really well on the roster.
He really does, man. The scariest part when they showed, I saw the footage of him shooting the threes so casually, and
it's
like,
unbelievable.
Wow. What else can we talk about? Because I have so many questions about Minnesota, where they've been, where they're going to go. So, next year, your starting lineup is – what do you think your starting lineup is going to be next year?
I think day one – I actually just talked about this at the timeline a couple of days ago. Day one of the season, what is pretty widely predicted, and I would have trouble not seeing this, is Rubio at point, Kevin Martin, shooting guard, Wiggins, the three – and KG at the four, and Towns at the five. I think Towns will start from day one.
Nice. And so you think Tech's going to be all right coming off the bench?
I think at this point he's going to understand it's better for him to. Because with Tech's situation, like, his health's not getting any better. He's going to be playing reduced minutes anyway. And with KG already, KG's not going to be playing 35, 40 minutes a game. Like, so we already have one person in the starting lineup who's going to rotate early. And then with Tech, like, if he plays 20 a game and stays mostly healthy for most of the season, I will be very, very happy. Because with his legs and his ankles, with as many problems as he's had with them, that would be a desirable outcome at this point. And just thinking about Peck not as a starter coming off the bench to body around people's second units, he'd be great at that. Like, that'd be an awesome fit for him. And
definitely agree, man.
Yeah, like that. I think it's going to be good, like, for him, because he's going to get favorable matchups a lot more often. He's not gonna get beat up by premier post players nearly as much. And he's just – I think it's going to help him stay healthier, and he's going to be more successful. So, I mean, he gets paid a boatload. But I also think that he's a smart enough guy to understand that to preserve his health and his career, it's going to be the right move. So I think that's what's going to happen.
I dig it. So let's shift gears, go back to the draft a little bit. What – any surprises, any huge surprises for you in the first round?
Boy, the Heat getting Winslow. Like, that's unbelievable. I can't believe he fell that far. That's such a good pick. Like, and the Hornets taking Kaminsky over him. I don't care how many times we talked about the Hornets wanting Kaminsky. Like, you come down to a 1-to-1 between those two picks, especially with Charlotte's roster, the way it's constructed with all those power forward, stretch four types with Zeller in there. Like, Winslow would have made so much sense, but he slipped, and that's a fantastic pick for Miami. So I think that was my biggest surprise.
Yeah, I think everything, like, people were saying he should have went to Detroit. Winslow should have went to Detroit, but Stanley Johnson, I think personally that they're both one for the on the wing. They're 1 and 1A to me. Those two.
Yeah.
I don't see a huge difference or where Detroit made a mistake. So if you look, I'm surprised by how deep this draft is the more we look at it. And so
yeah.
I guess my big drop shock was Moutier. But yeah, Winslow at 10 was amazing, and I just don't know what's going on in Charlotte, man. I
don't get
sooner
it.
Or later,
like,
I know you're kind of like rebuilding, you know, and you brought in Al Jefferson as an ultimate building block, and you have the defensive wing. Sooner or later, you got to get a little continuity. And, like, you know, Lance came in, Lance is gone, which is understandable. He didn't really work.
Well, and Lance played like trash last year. He deserved to be gone.
Yeah.
So,
he was that,
like,
bad.
What, did he shoot like 18% from three? Like, just miserable.
Right. But like you said, man, Kaminsky.
And Kaminsky
nice
could be
season.
Fantastic. He could come in and be fantastic. But they just did this. Like, they just did this. Like,
so,
although for Charlotte, I liked the trade for Batum. I think if Batum can stay healthy this year, that could be a really nice addition for them.
Yeah, that's such a big if. That's such a big if.
It is. Well, but he'd been so good before last year. Like, just consistent. But then with, like, I don't remember what he was hurt with last year, but he just couldn't get shots to fall last year.
Yeah.
And,
you know,
I mean, they weren't playing Vonley anyway. Like,
my thing with Batum is one of those players I think he's great if you're a contender or like a high-quality team. He's going to give you the extra bump to the next level. I don't know if he is the player that Charlotte needs. Of course, he's a positive. He's going to be a plus. I don't know if he's enough of a plus to really move the needle on them.
Well, and like same thing for Jeremy Lamb. Like that's nice. You got UConn's title winning Kemba and Lamb back together, but like how much is Jeremy Lamb going to move the needle on that team?
I'm going to disagree with you here with Lamb for the simple fact that I think this is almost it costs them next to nothing, and it's one of those really high reward, low risk things because he needed a fresh start. He bottomed out already in OKC. I think his confidence was shot. So I think that was actually a pretty decent move. Just a low gamble risk. But I don't know what Charlotte's doing.
I'm curious. Yeah, Mike said they weren't done dealing yet. So we'll see what their roster actually ends up looking like. But right now, I'm not buying it.
I'm with you, man. I'm not a fan of Trey Lyles at Utah either.
Yeah, that was an interesting choice. Like, man, Utah, who could they have taken that I would have liked better than that?
Devin Booker went right behind him.
Oh, I was going to say, Booker. I love Booker. Like, that, I love Booker to Phoenix, too. Like, dude can shoot.
My problem with Devin Booker going to Phoenix is a problem with Phoenix. I don't know what's going on with their front office these last couple of years. And I hate to see good young players going into unstable circumstances. That's why, I mean, I kind of worry about Willie Cauley-Stein.
What about Trill? Yeah, I was just going to say, what a mess.
How do you bring in a coach who hasn't coached in years, George Karl, and you let him alienate your best player? How do you let this happen in Sacramento?
Because Vivek is clueless. Like, when your owner, like, it's not like he's, like, I don't think he's, well, I think he's bad at his job, but, like, how can you not figure out that Carl's going to be combative? Look at how many times this happened in Denver. Like, with Carmelo, with JR, with Iguodala, like, how many times is he just, I'm going to have my way and you're going to get out. And, like, if he wants to play, I don't think he and Boogie couldn't work together, but he decided he and Boogie couldn't work together and then he was going to make it happen.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
It's mind-boggling.
I'm glad that they're finally talking. Maybe, like, I finally started to hear, well, maybe we should just fire Carl today a little bit. Like, maybe we shouldn't trade our player away for beans. That's what the thought should be. But, and I'm hoping that Vlade can get that done.
Yeah, I don't get the, I don't know the inner machinations of an NBA team. But you think the very first time the owner would have just called George Karl and said, hey, cut the shit. The GM would call and say, hey, nothing else. Cut it out.
Vivek doesn't make sense. Like, they should never have gotten rid of Malone. Timberwolves fan, I would have killed to have Mike Malone on the bench at Timberwolves next year. Like, killed. Absolutely slaughtered.
So you're not too high on your boy Flip coaching a team?
I love GM Flip. GM Flip is great. I dislike Coach Flip. That's the
What's your issue with the?
It's just like he doesn't. He still plays like he's playing with his own, like those mid-2000s Pistons teams. Like I don't know how Wiggins wasn't shooting threes last year. Like that's. Like, he's got the range. He's proven that he has the range. When you only let Kevin Martin ever be the only person that shoots threes on the team, like, what was the stat that I saw that I was going to bring up when this conversation came up? I just saw a good one. The Wolves haven't had a three-point shooter that averaged above 40% since Gorgui Dieng last year, who went 1-for-1.
Jesus. Is that a real stat?
They're consistent. Yeah, and they're I remember it was hilarious. they're consistently bottom two or three in the league in like number of three pointers made, and just they haven't evolved from the game. The fact that like Anthony Bennett and Adrian Payne and even Wiggins are out here just jacking long twos like it's their day job. You're not encouraging the coach. Like if Bennett could have extended his range to three and been at all consistent last year, he would have been a worthwhile player. Because he was real good at a jump shot from like 19-20. So
yeah, it just
step
it
back.
Goes to show you how, it goes to show that, and I hate, some people hate hearing the term modern NBA. You know, it's different, and there are certain analytical things such as, hey, don't shoot a 20-footer, step back and shoot a three, that just make absolute sense. And the fact that certain coaches just refuse to embrace that, pardon Scott, flip. That's
Randy.
It's a damn. Yeah, I worry about those franchises because I hate to see good talent going to waste. I want the NBA to put out the best product possible, and part of that is having teams be the best possible they can be, and a team that just refuses to shoot threes is not doing that, you know? So,
well, I'm curious if Flip's going to evolve this year. Like, I'm willing to see because, I mean, last year was a toxic pile of crap for most of the year, and we were tanking for about 60 games out of the season, admittedly. And, like, so he didn't try that hard to improve anything. And this year, there are so many tools with so much potential on this roster now, even with, like, the project players that are on the roster. And, like, if we could actually try and play basketball a little more this year, that would be nice. And I'm hoping that we don't get bit by the injury bug like we did last year and play, like, 10 games with a 6- or 7-man rotation.
you guys got hit pretty hard last year. I'm pretty jealous. What were your thoughts when you saw the Celtics took Terry Rozier at 16?
I have personal beef with Terry Rozier because he knocked my boys out of the NCAA tournament, like, single-handedly. I'm a graduate of the University of Northern Iowa, proud 5 seed in the NCAA tournament this year. And the game that they lost was Terry Rozier just going off, making everything that he threw up in the air. So I have beef with Terry Rozier. So I was mad about that pick.
All right, well, guess
second
what?
Second of all, just... I saw no mock that had him out of the 20s ever. Like, Draft Express's last model had him 30 to Golden State.
You know, my thing is that if you wanted him, he would have been there. He would have been there at the 27th pick.
Yeah.
So why would they take him at 16 when there were players like Kevin Looney on the board? When there's, you know.
He was never projected higher than 29th ever.
It's
ever.
Bobby Portis was there. Even Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, Jarrell Martin. I mean,
Rashad Vaughn right after him.
Right after
like,
him.
Jerry and Grant at 19, DeLon Wright at 20. Like, you want to take a point guard, take a point guard. Heck, you could have taken your 28th pick, which, like, if they were going to take Rozier, fine, take Hunter at 16. Like,
I mean,
if they would have switched their two picks, it would have been a lot less like head scratching.
Yeah, I don't get it, man. I don't get it.
And I'm not gonna lie, I like RJ Hunter. Like, I like that pick. I was hoping that Tyus Jones was off the board. Yeah, like.
So you're really high on Tyus.
The conversation was, like, Towns is going number one. That's pretty much not been in question for a while. So then it's, what do we do with 31 and 36? And obviously our biggest glaring need was backup point guard. Because Zach LaVine is done doing that now. Now that we're not tanking, we're done with that. So the options on the board were, I mean, same list we basically just went over. It was looking at Tyus Jones, DeLon Wright, Jerian Grant, Rashad Vaughn were basically the ones to look at. And then I actually today heard that, like, the Wolves have been looking at Rozier at 31. So, like, those are the main options. And no one expected Tyus to fall. Like, the Wolves were – I know they were talking a lot with the Rockets at 18, trying to make something work to go where, like, because that was where he was projected to go by a lot of people since the Rockets needed that. And then the Rockets went out and took, who did they take? Oh, Decker. Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
And then he
I don't know if you saw the Rockets got Montrezl Harrell in the second round.
Yeah, I haven't been paying attention to the second round. I need to actually look through these.
Go ahead. So you're saying Ty slipped. And
So, yeah. But, like, it was because the Wolves have been looking at, like, DeLon and Jerian Grant at, like, the back of the round, and then they start going to 19 and 20 before Tyus, which was not what had been projected. So people are like, well, Tyus is falling. And it's just like, well, if he gets past 21 at Dallas, then maybe there's a chance. Dallas had a deal on the table that was, I think, if I saw it right earlier, it was 31 and 36 for 21, and Raymond Felton, which the Wolves did not want. And then the other rumor from Minnesota media was that people had been open to trading, but the trade needed to involve Gorgui Dieng.
Yeah.
Which, it depends on, like, what else was there, but because I think Dieng, at least at this point, is still worth more than a first-down pick. But it's that was worth debating. So those are the things that were around. And then Cleveland came up at 24 and took him, but it was once he got low enough that the trade of 31 and 36 straight up was possible, people started to believe. So Tyus is the dream option, primarily, like, I don't want to say primarily because he's a Minnesota boy, but he is. Like, that's why a lot of Wolves Twitter knew who he was. He's from Apple Valley, went to high school there, before going to Duke, was a big deal all the way through high school. And Rashad Vaughn actually was too. But Tyus, obviously, he's got the championship pedigree. He's a good player that went to Duke and was very successful in his year there. And I think he's a great addition. He's not necessarily going to be like a world beater, but he didn't need to be. He's another first-round pick. He's picked to be Ricky Rubio's backup, and he'll be probably a better backup situation than we had the entirety of last year. And if he plays even mediocrely, he'll be better than J.J. Barea was for 5 years. So.
Oh, man. I'm pretty, yeah. It bums me out, man. I'm bummed. Because I've seen all the other young teams, you guys are getting better and better, and, like, in leaps and bounds, you know. Look at Orlando. Look at you guys. Look at Utah. You know, and what are we doing? So.
Well, how do you – okay, I'll ask you, how do you feel about Jordan Mickey at 33?
I don't know anything about him. I haven't watched anything. You know what? It's like imagine somebody's – you ever seen a plate spinner?
Yeah.
In a circus? So imagine – and once they start – he starts missing on them and they start dropping – he gets worse and worse and worse and spins out of control, walks, and he's smashing plays left and right. I'm worried that's what Danny Ainge is doing right now. He tried to gather the assets, and he had all his plates spinning, and then he went out and got IT2 and Crowder, and he knocked the whole plan kind of out of skew. And I'm concerned to see in this offseason and the next season and the next offseason, did he derail his own plan to the point where now it's going to just be a bunch of shattered crockery everywhere? So, I'm numb to it, man. I'm gonna let everybody do the off season thing. You keep saying, hey, but now you have assets, whatever.
Did you like the deal for three that was proposed between whatever the assets were going back and forth between you and Philly?
What deal is this?
Let's see if I can find that. I know Philly had a set. There was a deal that was around earlier today that was the Celtics trying to trade up to 3 that then didn't end up going through, obviously.
That wasn't happening. That's the most frustrating part about it. People go, oh, yeah, just you guys can just trade up. It's not that easy because teams don't want to just give up, you know, top 4, 5, 6 lottery picks, especially for the kind of assets we have, which just aren't that great outside of Marcus Smart, you know, so whatever.
It was Smart 16-28 for Noel on the 3.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I wouldn't have been too upset, but, I mean, it's what are you doing? You know, you just drafted a high pick last year, and now, yeah, I wouldn't have been too upset. That would have been you'd had, Nerlens Noel, right, and the number 3 pick?
Yep.
Yeah, and there's no – once I heard that deal, I was like, Philly's not doing that. Why would they do that? So, whatever.
Okay. I'm stoked about RJ Hunter.
I'm one bad Celtics move away from jumping ship, man.
Yeah.
You got room over there on the train?
I'm aboard, man. We always got room.
Who do you think, besides the top, out of the top 7 guys, no, top 5 guys, out of the top 5, take them out of the equation. Look at the next, the first round. Who is going to be a star in the next 3 years?
Out of the rest of the first round, minus the top 5.
I think we agree, right? Top 5 has pretty good star potential.
Pretty solid, yeah.
Right? So, yeah, there's a pretty good chance that it's scary, though, when you think about it. Out of those top, let's say even out of top 8, there's probably going to be 2 or 3 busts, right? That's how it kind of goes. Or 2 or 3.
That's, yeah, pretty normal.
Right. So, all right. So, let's say take the top 5 out of the equation. So, out of the rest of the first round, who do you think has the most promise?
Promise as a player in general, I don't know. I think Winslow got the best situation. And that's going to allow him to grow much easier and much more quickly, I feel like. Just because, Spoelstra is going to do well with him. He's working with a good setup in Miami that's going to help him grow as a player in the right areas and really develop. He could be playing with Dwayne Wade, which would be a really good person to learn from, learn some of the tricks of the trade. And just, I think that table is kind of really well set for him.
Okay.
So I'll go with him.
I don't know if you've seen me tweet it before, but between him and Stanley Johnson, I think they have, just because of their skill set and the way the NBA is going now, they have the best chance to be 2 good pros. I can definitely agree with that one. I don't know. Who do I think? I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if you heard earlier, I said I think Moody has the biggest, one of the big highest ceilings, but then he has a chance to be probably the biggest bust. So, but, I don't know. I really like Bobby Portis, man. And I think relative to where he was picked, he kind of fell a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
He's going to
float. I've seen him as high as 15. Chicago got a really good buy on him.
Yep, I think he's going to flourish in Chicago, especially in that new offensive system that they're going to install. He's kind of another injection of energy they need. So I think he might be in 3 or 4 years at 22. He's going to be one of those guys like, wow, I can't believe he dropped to 22. Now let's switch gears out of your top 5. I'll stretch it out to Stanley Johnson. Out of your top 10, who is the guy out? Yes, I was going to ask it straight. I was going to say, let's take Frank Kaminsky off the board. Who do you think has the biggest chance to disappoint?
Out of the top 10 or top 8?
Top 10. Let's go top 10.
Top 10, I think Cauley-Stein.
Ooh. So what makes you say this?
Number 1, situation again. Because the Kings are, who knows? And
wow.
I worry, especially if the Boogie trade happens, which I don't think it's going to, but if it does, that's a team so used to running through their center. And Cauley Stein's, like, lack of anything able to play offense at all is really concerning if he becomes, like, a focal point of a team. And if he's not a focal point of a team, I think it's going to be fine. Sacramento doesn't have enough around him other than, like, Cousins. Like, Collison's a nice piece. Rudy Gay can get his buckets when he gets his buckets. But, like, if he ever ends up becoming, like, a real focal point of a team, like, people are talking about, like, Tyson Chandler as a ceiling. That's great. But, like, and he's an incredible defender. That's fine. The problem is, like, I'm worried that, like, anytime you have a guy who can only play one end of the floor, like, that feels like a really big red flag, especially, like, the direction things are moving with. You've got to be able to defend multiple positions and be able to be worth something on offense. It's like, what would Draymond be if you took away his ability to hit jumpers and get to the rim?
He would be Marcus Haislip.
Yeah, like... So I worry about Cauley Stein. Like, he could be great, but there, I don't know. Like, I feel like there could be something there that could be a real problem. It, like, although playing with Boogie, I think he could be really great and maybe start to develop something and turn into a really good player. But if I'm going to pick somebody, why not? I'll go with Cauley Stein.
I'm going to agree with you. As well, with the caveat, like you said, it's all about that front office being a mess right now, and
yeah.
Boogie stays close. If Boogie's gone, and then you got this number six pick and no offensive focus, and the team is just, you know, in turmoil, then
it's
yeah,
throw it's the ball. That team turns into throw the ball to Rudy Gay every possession.
Oh God, that's just
that's what it is. That's what's gonna happen. Like.
So we have a question. One question from Twitter before we. I think we're gonna wrap up here in a minute. But here's a question from @frightenedinmate. That's his screen name is Young Person Wells. He wants to know any talk of where Peck might be moved. Is that a priority?
I wish. Problem with moving Peck, and I'm gonna look this up so I can get numbers right. Peck's contract right now. Peck's getting paid $12.1 million a year, 15, 16, 16, 17, and $500,000 less in 17, 18. So he signed for more years for a total of $35
million. Holy crap. Peck's making almost $7 million a year.
Yeah, and for a guy with chronic injury problems who is now the kind of the model of big man that the league is moving away from, quote-unquote, with he's got a great back-to-basket game, he gets to the free throw line, he makes his free throws okay, never been a great rim protector, decent rebounder, on $12 million a year, that deal's impossible to move. Like, it's I'm sure that if the Wolves found someone that would, like, take the bait, it would work, but that's 3 years of guaranteed money. Like, he's there through 2018. And I don't think, like, maybe the last year he becomes valuable as a salary dump for somebody, but, like, because it's – and then with the salary cap going up, it's going to ease itself a little bit, but, like, this year especially, there's no way that deal's going anywhere. Like, I can't see a matching deal that will even work for any teams. Like, unless, like, we can talk Philly into taking him for, like, 82nd-round picks, I don't know, which, like, they're the, like, it's, like, them and the Knicks, the people that are going to have cap room for him, and nobody's interested in that. So I don't think there's any way he can move. I'd take a trade for him, but...
Never, ever count out the Knicks, man.
Yeah, it's Dolan will do what Dolan does. I didn't hate their draft today.
The Knicks, I think the Jerry and Grant saved it. And even, I don't know what I
really
feel
about. I don't hate Porzingis. I don't hate Porzingis at all.
I don't hate him either. It's just I'm leery of him, man. I still have that the Darko syndrome where
Darko syndrome. Don't you worry.
Oh yeah, you guys. How much did you guys give Darko for a couple years?
I'm almost glad the Basketball Reference doesn't have salary data for that. Oh wait, no, it does.
How much did the Wolves pay him for? 1, 2, 3, 4 years. That's over $20 million. Over $20 million in 4 years to Darko, well after he'd been drafted.
Yeah, when we already knew he was a bum, and they still
gave him 7.5 in his first year of his contract in 09-10.
Wow,
that's
David Conn set you guys. David Conn set you guys back about 15 years. Seriously.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, the Cleveland Cavaliers are setting us up to evolve nicely.
They just, I think, who they just traded for? I'm following along with the draft here as we're talking. They just got somebody pretty, was it Rondae Hollis Jefferson? Hey, man.
Oh, is that?
Let's take a look for you. They just picked up
Portland,
somebody.
Portland and Brooklyn. Oh, Mason Plumlee.
Yeah.
Trailblazers send Hollis Jefferson and Steve Blake to the Nets for Plumlee and Pat Connaughton.
Plumlee and who?
41 from Notre Dame.
Okay, I see. Yeah. I mean, we're going to see a lot of moving, man. I'm going to try to have you on
like
again after.
Everybody said that all the moving is going to be today. I think all the moving is now going to be over the next few days. Because I don't think very many of these picks are set where they're going to be. Like, several of the top 10 could even move. But it's a fascinating time to watch the league, man. It's going to be fun.
Oh, you guys traded Cedi Osman. Oh, and you traded Rakeem Christmas. Did you see that?
Where?
Yeah, you traded, Cedi Osman, the 31, and the 36.
Watch.
And Rakeem Christmas, you traded him off to Cleveland.
Oh, were those were 31 and 36, yeah. I don't mind that. Yeah, like, how do you feel about Looney to the Warriors?
Oh, that's huge. That's the NBA's making mistakes because they're letting the Warriors restock with players like that. I mean, 6'9", mobile. I remember before they were calling him the next Kevin Durant, which is that's inaccurate. He's not as athletic and he's not the perimeter player, but the guy can shoot. He's long. He can defend. The league might be in trouble, man. They're like.
If he hadn't had his, I think it was health questions that held him back as far as he was top five through a lot of the regular season, like top five, top six in a lot of mocks. He peaked way up in the top 10 by January, February.
Yeah, I remember that was the talk, and I mean, he's really raw. He's pretty young, too, and he's whatever.
Yeah, he was freshman, yep.
That's
so that
scary,
it's another tool. Like, it's another tool the Golden State gets to develop. And, I mean, D-League champions this year, they've got a system in place for those players. Like, league's in trouble.
Yeah, and, I mean, he was there. We could have took Hunter at 16 and got Looney at, 27, but Celtics don't know what the hell they're doing, so.
Ainge going to age.
I think I'm gonna go have a drink now and just stare at the.
No, it's good. Yeah. I'm gonna do the same.
Well, yeah,
but
you're
celebrating. Appreciate you having me on,
man.
Yeah,
hey,
you're having a different kind of drink.
Yeah, I'm gonna sit there crying in my beer, man. But yeah, I'm gonna try to do this. I don't know, at least once a week, and I'm gonna get better at it. And
I appreciate that.
I definitely like to have you on again, man. We'll just chop it up like this. I appreciate it. So
anything
you want to say before you go, man? Want to plug?
Feel free to hit me up on Twitter at ProfCedar, ProfCedar. I write at Canis Hoopus, part of the SB Nation Network. I don't write as much as I should, but I'm going to probably have a draft reaction piece up in the next couple of days. And, yeah, I talk about the Timberwolves. I talk kind of general league stuff. I'm a league fast nut. I watch as much basketball as I can. So feel free to hit me with a follow on there. And, yeah, I'll be glad to talk basketball anytime we want. So just great pleasure being on.
All right. Thanks for joining us, man. Congratulations.
Yeah, pleasure.
And,
take care of yourself, my dude. Have a good one.
All right, brother. Yep.
Peace.
So, we heard the excitement of a Minnesota Timberwolves blogger. We heard the joy of a Milwaukee Bucks blogger. You know, everything's sunshine and lollipops and rainbows in their land. And I got Terry Rozier and R.J. Hunter. Yeah. All right, but let's be serious. Terry Rozier is a talent. I think he's a pretty big guard, right? And like he said, I mean, he was fearless in college, and he's a scorer. He's not a shooter. He's going to be a scorer. R.J. Hunter can really shoot the rock. We needed that on the perimeter. So it is what it is. This is what Celtics is moving forward with. And free agency, a lot of free agency talk, a lot of movement and trades. But all in all, I think it was a really entertaining first round. I don't see how Kevin Looney fell so low. I don't see how Rozier went so high. Not too fond of Trey Lyles, but it is what it is. And Philly took we're still drafting. There's some highlights and lowlights in the draft. Take a look at this first round again. Moutier dropping as much as he did was a shock. I like that Russell went number two. That was a bold move by the Lakers. Okafor at three is an asset. You know, we try to force the issue with what we think Hinkie should do with this is what they're doing. It's asset collection right now. Let's hope Embiid heals up. So, you know, I can't see him keeping all three of those, Embiid, Okafor, and Noel, especially when they got with Dario Saric coming over next year. So that's fine. He's collecting assets. He can package one of those guys with picks and get, you know, he can make some blockbuster moves. And they're way well below the salary cap. So Porzingis, huge upside, huge risk. But I think what separates him from guys like Darko and Bargnani, he is a real shooter. If you watch his draft expect profile or watch you can find clips. The guy can really – he's come off pin downs and curls, and he's pulling up, and you see the legit 7'1", you know, and he's probably still growing. He's a young guy. He can really shoot it. I mean, he looks smooth coming off of screens. He's hitting step back. He's dribbling into – the elbow and then, you know, pulling up off the dribble. Hizonja, same thing. I think he's legitimate. He's a Euro, so people have a preconceived notion, but I think people understand Hizonja is like 6'8". So he can play some small, he can play some small forward too, and he has a nice little handle. He can, you know, he can get to the rim. He's pretty athletic. He'll get up and punch it on people. He likes to dunk everything around the rim. That's another thing about Porzingis people don't understand. He likes to dunk. He likes to put people in the rim. Cauley Stein, I don't think you can go wrong here because he's going to be a great defensive player. And anyway, I think too often we lean on one side of the ball and we talk about is, you know, we want scoring. But I think he'll work. I just hope Sacramento doesn't ruin him and let him fall through the cracks with all the issues they have in the front office. Moutier, huge potential. I mean, he could be a primetime star player one day. That jump shot, and when a guy can't shoot free throws, it worries me. Stanley Johnson, he's a great pick for Detroit, right what they need. another big, strong body. They got Reggie Jackson there. I don't know about KCP too much, two guard there, but they still need a power forward because Monroe's going to be gone, but that's a good pick for them. So all in all, yeah, interesting first round. Looking forward to the summer. We'll be doing podcasts and we'll be talking basketball, and I have different guests on. I think you'll be surprised some of the guests I have. I'll have to do some homework and do some prepping and make sure I bring my A game, because I got some guys who'll come on here and talk some real basketball and talk circles around me and educate, you know, all of us while we listen. So, but nice draft day. Nice draft day, inaugural Snotty Takeover. Thanks for listening, guys, and I'll be back next Thursday.